Hello out there, my friends. This is Tim Binal of BinalofAmerica.com with another edition of Binal of America Audio. It is February 18th, 2006. This week, part two of two, Steve Bassett. We offered up a marathon session last week, 1 hour, 44 minutes. That was part one. If you haven't heard that yet, go back, check it out. Jump back here where we are. You'll be all caught up. This is a massive interview. In this concluding edition, we talk about the ABC UFO special, the 06 and 08 elections with regards to disclosure, what a post-disclosure world would look like. We go on a worldwide tour to find which countries may have key developments in disclosure for the future, including South America, Japan, Europe, Australia. We have a long discussion on China and disclosure and why it's all or nothing when it comes to China. And then we go through all the various roadblocks you've heard to disclosure, just all the reasons why it won't happen, all the reasons why it can't happen. We throw them all at Steve, and he just takes a whack at each one of them, and his response pretty much gives you an idea of what is in the mindset of those at the forefront of the disclosure process. For those of you unfamiliar with Steve Bassett, here's a brief bio. We give a little more in part one. You got to check it out, I'm telling you. Steve is a political activist, founder of Paradigm Research Group, executive director of the Extraterrestrial Phenomena Political Action Committee, XPPAC, author of the Paradigm Clock website, and a political columnist, commentator, and former independent candidate for Congress. He is also the executive producer of the X Conference. Without any further ado, let's rock and roll, folks. Recorded on January 16th, 2006, Steve Bassett, Part 2 of 2 on Binal of America Audio.
All right, now the last big event I thought that sort of came to my mind for the year in exopolitics would be here in America would be the infamous now ABC UFO special, which was probably the most high-profile coverage of the ET phenomenon that we saw in America this past year. It's been almost a year now since the special aired, and everybody in ufology has an opinion on it, and I haven't heard yours, so what did you think of it, and you know, speak to that a little bit.
Okay, I did write a column about it in UFO Magazine, which is in the archive, obviously, and it's also archived on my site in the articles commentary section. A lot of people are upset with it because, again, there's a high level of frustration in this field of how things have advanced and when resolution is going to come. So anything that they know to be off the mark, I mean, it just makes them mad, and I appreciate that. I view it differently. I view it from a broader perspective. Jennings found out he had cancer. Exactly when is not clear. It seemed to be based on simply watching the television that he found out just prior to announcing that he would be leaving the show. I wonder about that. I think he might have known sooner. But in any event, in fact, I'm almost sure he knew sooner. But at some point, I think he'd been dealing with it, but I think at some point they realized he was losing the battle. So he retires from the show, and shortly thereafter he leaves, and he also announces that he has this. Now, parallel to all this, his personal production company, PJ Productions, which had made some other documentaries in the past, including an infamous one about the Kennedy assassination, had made the decision to look at a UFO question and had been going around the country interviewing people for a number of months, including me. I'd heard the interviewed as many as 153 people for a documentary, which is 2 hours, turns out, in length. And they were serious. There was no question they were serious. They were interviewing the best people they could find. They missed some. I thought there's some that they really should have had, at least in their basket. And, of course, most of them did not make it on the air. And they put this two-hour documentary that he led, and it was virtually the last thing that he did of any consequence. It turns out there was actually another documentary that he also worked on, and it involved healthcare, and that was aired recently. But he was, it wasn't fully complete at the time of his death. He sort of completed it, and he has some part in it. So So it looks like the UFO documentary, Peter Jennings reporting, seeing as believing UFOs, Peter Jennings reporting UFOs, seeing as believing, was not exactly the last thing he did, but it was darn near. And it's notable that he allowed this to go forward. In other words, he was not uncomfortable with this being maybe the last major piece of his legacy as a journalist.
Yeah.
He promoted the show aggressively. He went on a number of other networks to promote the show, which was interesting, and appeared on some talk shows and so forth. You don't see that too often. You don't see an anchor from another network coming on to promote their documentary.
Yeah.
It's also notable that they did this through PJ Productions, and this makes a lot of sense. The networks, of course, have been extremely reluctant to engage this issue properly, and they need to answer to that at some point, too. But the pressure to approach the issue is growing and growing. The cable channels, of course, documentaries are pouring out of the cable channels on a weekly basis. The networks are sitting there, deaf, dumb, blind, going, ETs, ETs, I didn't know about ETs.
Yeah, yeah.
So they want to do something. By doing it through an independent production through Jennings, it gives them a plausible deniability. In other words, we didn't do it, they did it, and they had the choice to not do it. In other words, they put the thing together, and they don't like it, they don't do it. And then when they do it, again, it's Peter Jennings reporting. So it gives them a little bit extra distance, so it kind of makes it safer for them, and I noted that. And the documentary itself was acceptable to me. It raised all the key points that needed to be raised, and in a serious way. The first hour was particularly strong for the pro-ET hypothesis people.
Yeah.
Was enough to, should have been enough to galvanize dozens of journalists into action, but of course they didn't get galvanized. They're in some sort of a trance, or their brains have been eaten by insects or something. Whatever. They just say, well, this is interesting. Peter Jennings is reporting. Amazing stuff. But so what? There's no story here. Government told me there's no story here, and the government never lies to me. You know, the government's just the bastion of honesty, integrity. It would never lie to me about something important is extraterrestrial. So that was strong. The second half got complicated. And there was more debunking, or maybe not debunking, maybe that's being unfair. There was more counter arguments in the second half, but he did something that I thought was very deliberate in the second half of this program, the second hour, that I have a feeling was a deliberate attempt to mitigate the negative response from the government and or any consequences. They screwed up. I mean, there's no question that the documentary, as it is reviewed later on, it will be reviewed historically, will be viewed as very badly flawed, unquestionable, because of the second hour and what they did in the second hour. And what they did was this. They tried to imply that the whole concept of cover-up, or what I call the truth embargo, is all centered around simply Roswell. That when you talk about UFO cover, it's about Roswell. The cover-up of anything else is not relevant. That the cover-up is about Roswell, nothing else. And then they attempted to explain aside and account for Roswell. And he broke the veil of objectivity and specifically said flat out to the camera that Roswell, it turns out, was a myth, which in and of itself was a problem. But by connecting the cover-up to Roswell and then debunking Roswell as, in fact, a myth, they essentially debunked the cover-up itself. So what they're saying is that there is no cover-up. It was a problem that some of the public had with Roswell. Roswell, in fact, was not an ET craft crash, so therefore the government hasn't been covering up anything, which helps to take pressure off the government. because the one thing, one of the key elements of the public's dissatisfaction about this is the government's truth embargo and the lie. Not necessarily that they didn't take the public's interest at heart when they tried to deal with the ET issue back in the 50s, but they just kept the embargo going for many years. So anything that would sort of mitigate that would be helpful to the government. And that's exactly what they did in the second half. They had the presentation in the second half on abductions was actually much better than most people give it credit for. It was flawed by the fact that John Mack had died, and possibly because of that reason they left him out, but left the other academic, one Susan Clancy at Harvard,
yeah,
a woman whose shoes I would not want to be in, legacy-wise, let her kind of stand without counterpoise from Mack. But they also raised some very strong points about abduction. So I think that the documentary, 75% of it was pretty good and helpful. The 25% was significantly a problem, but I think for a reason. So it was a political equation that they solved there, and they did it. It has been replayed primarily on the National Geographic Channel.
Oh, really? They
apparently picked it up. Has been replayed on ABC that I'm aware of, though I'm not sure about that. If they were smart, they would do it again. But what hasn't happened is that you would think that given it had pretty good ratings, and the cost of a program like that is a fraction of what it costs to put on an ER or some of these other shows.
Yeah.
That ABC, rather NBC and CBS would be right behind it with some documentaries. But no, they just sitting there going, I don't know if it... with their huge corporate ownerships, with ties to the government through their government contractor, defense contracting links, and so forth. This is going to be awful for them. I really feel bad in a way, because the networks were the beginning of television. They did some great things, and they've helped shape the modern world. And when history finally looks at this, the networks are just going to be eviscerated over their complicity in this embargo and other things, where they got too corporately owned, too tied up, too connected to the government, and they lost objectivity and have served the nation badly, and they're going to be ripped to pieces. The legacy of all the people that ran them and owned them, what have you, are going to be kind of marred, badly marred, and they'll be even almost silly.
Yeah.
I don't envy them.
Well, I want to add one more thing regarding the Jennings thing. I think that Peter Jennings is a good man. I think he was an honest man. He was a good journalist. I liked him. And I am pretty sure that Peter Jennings knew there was an extraterrestrial presence. He hedged his comments in the promotion of the program. I understand that. I know that when he was promoting this program, he knew his cancer was bad and that he might not make it. And I believe that the reason he sent his team out to do that thing, that show, and do those interviews and get that show out there was so that before he died, he would be on record as someone who is a great journalist, great television journalist, an anchor, who addressed the issue in an in-depth way, in a consummate way, before he died, and that would be part of his legacy.
Yeah.
And I think his wife, if anybody knows this to be a fact, it would be his wife, and perhaps one day she'll elaborate on that. Step from behind the veil and let us know. I'd also like to know what Andrurian knows about the specifics of Carl Sagan's real views on this and what went on in terms of the subject matter and his relationship to the government. She's very protective of his legacy, but perhaps one day she will do that. Again, this is probably one of countless addendums and accounts which will not occur until after disclosure takes place.
Yeah.
And I think people will be eager to come out and clarify the positions and experiences of their loved ones, just to get them in the right context, historical context.
Yeah. Now, okay, so we just named like three events, four if you count the India Daily thing, the Hell Year, the Brazilian disclosure, the ABC UFO special, and obviously the India Daily thing. Those are four pretty big events in 2005. Now, we're at the beginning of 2006. Obviously, unless you have a crystal ball, you don't know, you couldn't tell me what the three big events of 2006 for exopolitics will be.
Well, I'm not Ed Dames. If I was Ed Dames, I could tell you everything was going to happen, or Sean David, Martin, I could tell you everything was going to happen. Unfortunately, I do not have prophetic powers. I do not have that ability. I'm completely terrestrial and mundane in my psychic skills.
But, well, if you're those guys, unfortunately, it probably wouldn't come true. But what do you think? What, given what you know and what you, you know, the lay of the land right now, what do you expect we'll see here in 2006? Do you see anything on the horizon that might break?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, I think that 2006 represents another window of opportunity for disclosure to take place. Disclosure, I want me to think of disclosure. It's really, it's a mountain that we've been climbing for 59 years, really. And it's a formidable mountain, very high. And just like climbing Everest, I mean, it takes years, sometimes of preparation, and months to get everything there, and then weeks to work your way up the mountain at different base camps. And you literally create a base camp, you move up to the next one, and you've got the final base camp, which is just before the summit, which is where I think we've been now since 91. And from there, you make your attempts, right, to get to summit. And if you don't make it, you fall back to that base camp, and you try to make another attempt. So in the last 14 years, I think there have been a couple of attempts to make it to the summit and effectuate disclosure, but they have not made it. They had to fall back to the base camp. And I believe that 2006 represents another year, another opportunity to make the assault to the top. And the reasons are very political. And I'm going to be going to some lengths to point this out to our government, both the executive and the congressional branch, using what tools I have at my disposal, depending upon the amount of funding that I have. And it's a simple equation. The Bush administration and the neocon ideologies which surround it and are embedded in it have run their course. They had their day, you might say, finally.
Yeah.
These are not Reagan Republicans. They're certainly not Goldwater Republicans. And for better or for worse, they reached a point where things are about to go downhill for them, and I think they know it. Something similar happened in the Clinton administration, but for much different reasons. Much different reasons. And because the reasons were different, Clinton weathered that storm and got out, I suppose, with a certain amount of his hide intact. But he was impeached. He went through a lot. And, of course, after he left, the Republicans, the other party, won the presidential election, or supposedly so.
Yeah.
Well, the situation facing the Democrats, the Republicans right now, is far worse than what Clinton was facing. Most of his scandals were minor, and the major one was about obstruction of justice over personal matters of sexual conduct. And overall, he had the people behind him, overwhelmingly behind him. You remember the polls were totally in favor of Clinton in terms of should he be impeached and what should go on and support for his policies. His presidency has gone pretty well. So that is not what Bush is facing. Bush is facing, and he was well liked overseas. Bush is facing terrible, terrible time. There's indictments bubbling up all over the landscape regarding people connected to the administration. They're high-level stuff, too. There's talk of impeachment. He's being attacked on fundamental policy issues from the right and the left. He has little support overseas. His approval ratings are down. They recently bounced a little bit, but they're down and capable of going much lower. He has an ongoing war, which is still not under control. It's an absolute mess. And he has an opposing party, which is out for blood. Because of the Clinton administration and what he went through at the hands of the right wing.
Yeah.
And so as this thing disassembles, it's possible that he may go through far worse than what even
Kerry and the Knicks in that sense. So there is a lot of carryover. I mean, there's a lot of carryover from the Knicks and Bush administration into their world.
Yeah.
A lot of players back from those days. The last 2 years of administration, really the last three, could be awful. They are facing possibly a major catastrophe in the congressional elections this November. And if they lose those elections, if they lose the House, that opens the door for impeachment big time. If they lose the Senate, this is going to make it worse. So I conviction is very difficult, but certainly impeachment. And you can bet your bottom dollar that the Democrats would go for it if they thought they had a chance.
Yeah.
And unlike Clinton, now let me take that back. Clinton was also not similar to Clinton, but more advanced is the relationship to all of this with the internet. The internet has become more powerful, more influential than it was even during the Clinton administration, and will be brought to bear on this issue. So if that happens, they're getting set up to lose the presidential election in 2008. All of that would lead to a revolt within the party. The fundamentalist wing of the Republican support base is getting chewed up. Roberts is falling apart. Falwell is a non-issue. Roberts, in fact, was even disavowed by Israel recently. They're losing that. That's going to lose its influence. They're headed for a complete meltdown. And the neocons could literally be running a town on a rail. Now, there are plenty of people in this country that would welcome all of that. All right, let me be clear. But that's not my job. My work is nonpartisan. I'm not here to bring disclosure or to help effectuate disclosure on behalf of the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, or any other party. I'm here to do it part of the nation and by extension, the globe. So the message that I think the Bush administration needs to hear loud and clear is that they have the potential to turn all this around, most of it around, very quickly and be the disclosure administration. This is further interesting by the fact that I can make a pretty good case. And this case was supported, by the way, by material in a recent book called Exempt from Disclosure, published, it was authored by Robert Collins and Richard Doty. The book is organizationally a mess. It was self-published and put out quickly, but for those in the know, it's got a lot of interesting stuff in it, and it tends to corroborate what I've talked about for years, the original, the first Bush administration. In the second term, he was supposed to be the disclosure president, and they were moving toward that. And now his son's in, so there's a certain connection there, which is notable.
Yeah.
They are, no matter what they do, they cannot escape the attacks that will continue to pound them over their mendacity regarding the war, the justification for the war. They lied about the war. And no matter what they do, they can't get away from the fact that the most secret administration in history, and there are people that have written eviscerating descriptions of all this. John Dean's book, Worse Than Watergate, gets across pretty well, but even people who work in administration have written pretty sharply about this. So they have the most secret administration in history, and they've got one that's really in the corner on major mendacity. And here is the biggest issue of all time sitting there. The greatest issue in the history of the human race, political issue, scientific issue, whatever, sitting there, embargoed for 59 years. And all I have to do is just say, okay, get in touch with the management group, whether it's called MJ-12, Committee of the Majority, whatever the hell they're called now, and just say, look, we're ready to go, we're going to do this, let's do it. Get us some docs, get us a quick game plan, we're going to announce this. And by doing that, they turn it all around. And suddenly, his administration becomes a disclosure administration. It becomes administration that ends a huge gap in the world knowledge, breaks the secrecy veil, and turns it around.
No, the enemies of the Bush administration would not like that. They would go, we can't have him get that credit, and we can't have him be able to spin his legacy that way. Unfortunately, they're limited by their partisanship.
Yeah.
They're thinking that, oh no, we can't have disclosure unless it's under somebody we like. It has to be done the right way. It has to be done our way, and so forth.
Yeah.
And things don't work that way. We don't know who's going to win the next election. Newt Gingrich might win the next election. So, we need to get, this is a global issue. We need to get on with this. We need to get on with the world. We need to get on with the business of the human race evolving, hopefully, to a better place. We do not have time to wait for the right political circumstance that fits somebody's. We need to get it done. And it needs to be done. And in this case, the case can be made that by doing it, it would be helpful to the administration and their overall position, their historical legacy.
Yeah.
Now, will it allow them to win to hold the Senate and the House in 2000? I don't know. Ultimately, I don't care. Does it allow them to win the election in 2000? I don't know, and I don't care. If they disclose now, if they hold the disclosure event in 2006, which again I think is very possible, I think this year's got the earmarks, and then try to spin a bunch of lies and deception around that in order to turn the issue to their benefit, not by its veracity, but by its mendacity. I'm going to lead the charge. I'll be out there to help them lead the charge to counter that and say, uh-uh. And, of course, this gets us back to the issue we talked about at the very beginning.
Yeah.
How involved and how important are going to be the people that have been doing this work for 50 years? We're going to need them. We're really going to need these people if an administration, whoever it is, took this disclosure moment and then used it by piling a bunch of nonsense on it, disinformation, and reapplying the tools that kept the embargo going to create a post-disclosure fantasy that serves their immediate needs, which may be winning elections, it may be weapons in space, it may be Marshall and a massive effort to engage extraterrestrials militarily, whatever. If it's bullshit, then it's got to be dealt with. But that remains to be seen. We don't know that that'll happen. People have predicted it, worried about it. But until it's done, we don't know. First we've got to get it done. First we've got to get the truth out.
Yeah.
And then we'll see what happens. It's not the end. It's only the beginning. Disclosure is the beginning. This whole prelude, 59-year prelude, is simply the ramp-up to the marathon. The marathon didn't start in 47. The marathon starts on disclosure day. This is all preparation. We've all been milling around, stretching out our hamstrings, carbo loading, talking with each other, getting ready for 59 years for the real marathon, which begins the day that the acknowledgement takes place in the new world. Literally is going to be constructed around that new information and all it means. That's going to preoccupy certainly me and a lot of other people for the absolute rest of their lives and be the dominant factor in the lives of the current generation who are, let's just say, entering high school. I mean, that's going to be the major focus one way or another of their lives for the next 100 years until things settle down again. And it becomes, and that may take maybe only 50 or 60 years, but when the presence of extraterrestrials will be as matter of fact and as unremarkable as the presence of sea otters or anything else that we take for granted in our modern world, and that will come to pass without question. And then who knows what will be going on. I'd love to be able to stick around and see that. I tell you, I'd love to, but I think it happened. So, this is the first thing that needs to be said about 2006. I think that the disclosure process in Canada is going to go further, and it's possible that Canada, that something could happen up there.
Yeah.
We're going to do everything we can to make that happen. I've stated repeatedly that if Canada were to break ranks on the extraterrestrial issue with the United States, meaning that they were going to go their own way and say whatever they wanted to, the thing would collapse. Wargo would collapse quickly. The U.S. couldn't sustain it. Canada's too close to us. There's too many Canadians here, too many Americans up there.
Yeah.
The media up there is not locked down. They couldn't contain it and be over. So Canada has positioned to effectuate this. They wanted to. Either to make it impossible for the U.S. government to not disclose or disclose himself. And that's their call, I don't know. So that's you're going to see more there. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see another Brazilian type thing. I think you'll see another government, at least one, maybe two, break ranks in that way, you know, sort of a semi-break.
That's what I was thinking too, yeah.
Can I pick some place, not off the top of my head?
Can I make a suggestion?
Go ahead.
All right. I was thinking maybe Japan or China. One of those two, I think, is primed to be the next.
Well, Japan might do a quasi-break. China, no. China, it's all or nothing there. China is a huge issue.
Yeah, they're going to keep it in-house for now.
Well, what I'm saying is, here's what I mean, all or nothing. A lot of people in this country, the neocons, try to sell the idea that this is going to be the American century, and they weren't even close. There's a good chance it's going to be the Chinese century.
Yeah.
However, they're limited by the fact that they're still close, too close, and they've generally been close for a very long time. India, on the other hand, has been less so, and it could be the Indian century. It certainly may be the Asian century. China has got great ambitions, and they are increasingly in a position to realize those ambitions. So if China makes a move on this, it will not be to send a message to the United States. They will end it. They will do full-out disclosure. They'll haul out craft. They'll haul out some bodies. They'll put some stuff up there, and they will claim this mantle for themselves. And it's interesting. They've been rattling their cages lately. They've been asserting themselves a lot. In fact, right now, there's a map that's being put in play that supposedly it's going up for auction. Supposedly, it's a copy of a map. It goes all the way back to, like, the 5th century in which the map shows a Chinese admiral had gone out and mapped North and South America.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
And there have been some other things that have turned up that may be hoaxes about China asserting their racial superiority and other things. I just have a feeling that China has huge ambitions. They have a space program in the works. They'll probably have to go to the moon. If they make a move, it will not be like Brazil. It will not be like Mexico. It will be a full-blown disclosure, and they will take that mantle for themselves. They've always felt they've been backseated. Their civilization goes back, probably, it may go back before summer. They're a little weary of the Western world-centric focus.
Yeah, yeah.
They're now carrying a tremendous amount of our debt. They've got a huge surplus with us. They have the nukes, of course. They're getting real close to asserting themselves as a real power. They've done that on time, but frankly, not to the level that they could, and I have a feeling it's getting close. And one way they might do that is disclosure. And so China, I put in a special category, not Russia, but China.
Yeah.
Russia, I don't think, would do it for that reason. They got other issues. They're tied to us a little closer, but China is not. Why is it tied to us? They're more dependent on us. China is not dependent on us. In fact, China's eating our lunch.
Yeah.
We get 4% growth here, and the president jumps up and down and sings praises. They had a 16% growth rate, I think, 2 years ago. So they may disclose, in which they'll take that legacy away from the West. And that would be intriguing. So they need to be watched, absolutely. And that doesn't mean there won't be other signs. I think they have to be watched. There may be a conference of some kind that they'll hold, and it may be more government-connected. They held one last year. I don't think it was government-connected. Maybe the government will be involved in the next one. That'll send a message. Something else will emerge. So, yeah, I think China, something will happen there.
What you really have to look for is them making a move to take a disclosure legacy for themselves.
Yeah, I can see how. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I thought about both. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Japan might toss something our way. Overall, we're not in too much of an antagonistic position with them. And I don't know if there's true impatience there. I think the impatience is more second world.
Yeah.
Because these are the countries that would benefit from technological change, large magnitude technological change.
Yeah.
Worldview change. I mean, they know they're getting short shrift, and they got a lot of problems. So when I look at Brazil, I look at Mexico, and India, which is almost second world. These are the nations that really want to benefit and need to benefit from a post-disclosure reality, even a post-contact reality, where new technologies will become available to the human race, and because we bring them out of the closet or the ETs provide it. They're the ones that need it badly. So I think you look at that second world for possibilities. That opens up. Boy. Again, South America. Any country in South America is going to do something.
Yeah.
That's a possibility.
Maybe some European countries type situation, type thing like that.
Well, maybe. Well, France, of course, has already done its thing. You may see Spain do something, possibly. Definitely. Australia intrigues me. Australia has been abused, I think, by the West to some degree, and used, I know, by the intelligence community. I mean, they really cut quite a figure down there. And I think sometimes I wonder if Australia is kind of fed up with that. So who knows? Something could emerge out of there.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
Oh, he's possible in 2000, absolutely. And what else? Another X conference, perhaps. If the money turns up, another be perfectly geared to do another conference along the line, not conference, but news conference along the lines of the May 9th press conference, the Disclosure Project put on in Washington, May 9th, 2001. We need another one, need a follow up. This year would be not a bad year for that. So that's a possibility. Certainly some witnesses will turn up. And also, I expect more books like Exempt from Disclosure. There's a lot of people that have operated in the interstitial area between the inside and the outside, connected to people in the UFO field, connected to people inside the government. I call them the men in gray. There are a lot of them. Robert Collins is one, and so is Richard Doty. I have a feeling you're going to see some more of that. I think that as we get closer to disclosure, either perceived to be closer or, in fact, we are closer, a lot of people that are in that role are going to want to get that on the record. They're going to want to get their story out there. They're going to want to get it out there in the best favorable light so that they're not forgotten.
Yeah.
Or that they are a player. I want to be a player in the process, but I think you're going to see this. So expect more of these kind of books. I was involved in this. I was involved in that. I think you're going to see some more witness emergence. I think that's inevitable. And the other thing to look for is the intelligence community. The intelligence community is very disaffected with the Bush administration. They got pushed pretty to the limit. Used and abused, you might say. And I think that there is a much greater potential this year for people in the intelligence community, either retired or otherwise, to break ranks and come out. And as we're already seeing some of that already, primarily mainstream stuff, but it wouldn't surprise me if the intelligence community suddenly became more of a friend to disclosure and willing to cooperate in ways hidden and not hidden. So look for that. Agents.
Okay. And obviously we have the next presidential election, rumors of Hillary Clinton running. Most people in the UFO community know about sort of how the Clinton administration was approached about disclosure often.
I don't think most people do. I think most people, researchers do.
That's what I mean.
The vast majority of people that are interested, I think it's still a minority, plurality, maybe 20%, 30%.
Okay, well, hopefully they'll educate and research them.
Hopefully they will, because that's a major issue.
And so do you think, what do you think we should be watching for in the 2008 presidential election? Anything in particular sort of come to mind?
Same thing I've said in every election. People have got to decide whether they want people to ascend to the presidency or to the highest powers without addressing this issue and let them go scot-free. Not ask the questions of them when they get the chance. To be good little boys and girls and just keep to the script. Not try to pin them down. Of course, I really mean the press here, but also people at these town hall meetings. Of course, Bush administration is famous for their controlled events. The Democrats try not to do that because they don't want to be seen that way, but they believe me, they wouldn't mind controlling it if they could get away with it. There's plenty of opportunities for either the press or the public to ask questions of these candidates on this issue. They won't do it. They're too embarrassed. Well, they got to get over that.
Yeah.
Nobody should get to the presidency without speaking to this issue in some depth, but obviously they continue to do that. So first and foremost, anybody that gets in the game needs to be hit. I don't care if it's Al Sharpton or Hillary Clinton or anybody else. They need to be hit with these questions repeatedly until they either read up on it, in order to avoid making a fool of themselves, or flat out say they don't want to take the questions or come clean. So that's the first thing.
And do you think that's the responsibility of the people in the UFO community, because the media is not going to do it?
It's the responsibility of everybody.
Well, yeah, I realize that, but I mean, since the media is not going to ask the questions, they haven't yet, I don't think they're going to for the 2008 election, it's important that people who want the answers don't just rely on somebody else to ask the questions if they have the opportunity.
Whoever you are, if you know there's an issue here, whether you're, quote, in the UFO community or you've been in the closet all these years, you get a shot at these candidates. You got to hit them with these questions.
Yeah.
If I had the money, I'd follow these candidates around and try it myself, but it's expensive, right? So you have to rely on people that are out there. They come to their town. They get out there and they're shaking hands or whatever. Even hit them with a question in the handshake line like Charles Hufford did.
Yeah.
Whatever it takes, because those things get on camera very more often than you might think. We just keep letting these people aspire to run the most powerful nation in the world, and we say, well, we don't want to ask you about that. You don't talk about that. You don't talk about that. There's a lot of things you don't ask them about. What's your position on overpopulation? Oh, we can't talk about that. So we don't ask them anything. The only people that seem to be willing to say whatever's on their mind and speak the truth are comedians now. The Dennis Millers, the Bill Maher's, the John Daly's that have a license to say anything they want. Everybody else is like, oh, well, we can't talk about that. Can't ask that. So consequently, we got people that go into office and then don't address those issues that they may be given a free ride on, and nothing gets done. And so we pay the consequences. In terms of the election itself, make no mistake about it, Hillary Clinton's going to run for president. She is way out in front of all other Democratic challengers. And she knows she's got to do it this time. She cannot wait any longer.
Yeah.
She's got a pretty good situation, so I guarantee you she's running for president, and there's a pretty good chance she's going to win the nomination. And I can assure you also that that's not going to be thrilling to the hardliner types inside government, both in the intel community, the military community, and the defense contractors, and other closeted neocons. They're not going to be thrilled about her as president, and they're not going to be thrilled at all about her being the disclosure president, which is what could very well happen. Because this truth embargo, by and large, is still hanging on by a thread, and it ain't getting any easier to maintain it with each passing year. And now we're talking 3 years from now, and then what, a 4-year administration? They think that they're going to keep this embargo going? My God, she'll be, there'll be an embargo on, and she'll be having dinner with extraterrestrials on the balcony of the veranda. I mean, it's ridiculous. So they had better think twice about playing this game much longer. In terms of the Republican side, I think they're going to be in total disarray. I think it's going to be a mess. I think they're going to be those that want to turn to McCain, but he's old paradigm. Newt Gingrich, suppose, is going to try to run. That's going to be kind of a joke. He'll be the Al Sharpton of the 2008 campaign. It's hard to know who the
who could emerge on the Republican side. McCain is clearly up there near the top. Oh, by the way, the other side, you've got Wesley Clark as a good president, vice presidential partner for Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting balance there. Look for him to emerge. Kerry wants another shot. It's not going to happen. Gore, not going to happen. Barack Obama's too soon. So you're looking at you're looking at Hillary and a strong national defense military type as her partner. That's the ticket that gets your first woman president, for better or for worse. On the Republican side, it depends on how much damage is done between now and then, because they're going to take hits like you wouldn't believe. I don't care if Iraq becomes the new Athens.
Yeah.
Right. It's too much price been paid. Recently, Columbia University did a study that tried to assess the cost of the war, taking everything into account, the direct, indirect, and tertiary stuff, and they've come up with a figure now this war is going to cost between $1 and $2 trillion.
Oh, man.
You take that in context and you start thinking about it, and it's extraordinary.
Yeah.
They only needed about $1 billion to fix those levees and could have saved New Orleans, but they couldn't afford it, and there's bridges falling down. They're going to spend $1 trillion to $2 trillion. And the whole thing could be wiped away in about a week. I mean, all it takes is an uprising in Iraq, and they can have a wonderful democracy, and the thing will be a religious Muslim country in 30 days. I mean, and it's all gone. You know, all $1.5 billion gone. Unless you want to go in with nukes and kill everybody again. I mean, it's just a disaster, no matter what happens at this point, and so who is going to emerge to the Republican side is hard to say, because they're about to go through the ringer, so you can't predict. The Democrats is a little more predictable. And in the middle of all this, as in every other election since 1948, the ET embargo remains, and the greatest news story of all time, the most profound information of all time, remains in a box that is not allowed to be opened by anybody but a few individuals with need-to-know clearance. And my thinking is, boy, it's getting really old.
Yeah.
This has got to end. So I am hopeful. What is ideal? And this is another reason why when the nonpartisan approach is appropriate. The ideal thing is for the Bush administration to disclose this year. Whatever benefit they get, they get. But that means that the next election will be the first one in the post-disclosure world, and it will mean that this issue will be completely and thoroughly debated. Certainly it will be part of the campaign on every level.
Yeah.
And the public will, after taking about a year, right, to, let's say it happened this mid-year, July, they'll take a year to digest all this. Fine. So it's mid-2007. And then they start to come out of their little shock. And then as 2008 began, they're ready to talk about it with every candidate out there, every governor candidate, every senatorial, congressional candidate, presidential candidate. And so it'll be the talk of the election all through 2008, as well as the rest of the world. And then the next president will be the first post-disclosure president, and their views on this subject, what they knew, when they knew it, why they knew it, everything else, and what will be fully connected to it. That makes sense. That works. And then Bush will get the credit. Even if they lose in 2008, he'll get the credit for making it possible for this to be part of our life and get on with it. And he'll deserve the credit because he did it. Now, good intentions only go so far. You got to do it.
Yeah.
You know, people that say, I'm too progressive, I'm on the left, I'm for the poor and this and that and everything else. And then there's something major needs to be done. So I can't do that. Well, your intentions don't mean diddly squat if you don't do it. Right? Nixon went to China. Not Adlai Stevenson. If Bush discloses, fine. Clinton could have. He should have, because he had nothing to lose. He'd been ruined, disgraced, on a personal basis. So he had nothing to lose, but he didn't. Why? Because his wife had something to lose.
Yeah.
And so he made the decision that I'm not going to engage this issue while I'm president or after I'm president, because I owe my wife one presidential nomination. I'm not going to argue with that. I mean, I'm not going to argue with that. What's the point? But Twist going to pick up that legacy or not? Interesting question. I look forward to this year with great interest. This is going to be a very interesting year. It's going to have some highs and lows. But I think it's going to be a more profound year. 2005 was a mess, but interesting. I think 2006 is going to be more profound. Interesting and more profound.
I hope so.